are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You just about floored me. You just about knocked me right off my chair when you said that.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You are not winning the overall, dude, whoever you are. You are definitely not listening to this podcast either, so I can make fun of you in hopes that you haven't started listening mid-season.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I really hope they are, and they email in and tell you that they're winning the overall. That'd be great.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Chuck and Darius. Darius, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Just enjoyed a conversation about ridiculous leagues and how terrible the Giants are and why AT&T is useless for home run hitting teams like the Brewers. So we're already a bit wacky. I think this should be a fun one.
Yeah, I'm running on about, I don't know, 6 hours sleep for the last 2 days. So 6 hours total for the last 2 days. So I may be a bit wacky myself, but it was a fun conversation. I kind of wish maybe we had done it on air, but oh well, everybody else is lost. Chuck, how are you doing, my friend?
I am just fine. I've already got my column out for the week. So after I, bleary-eyed get through this podcast, my work with you gentlemen will be done for the week. I can hole up in a cave and maybe actually heal up for the first time in weeks. So,
well,
hoping that happens.
I mean, we've got another short timer on here because Darius is going to be missing in action for the next 2 weeks as he travels to America.
And the low point of his travels will be he actually has to meet me in person. So
that would be the low point of anybody's world.
Yeah, I thought, how lovely, 2 weeks without Chuck, and then damn it, I realized.
Darius, tell us real quick, where are you headed?
So we're actually going to a wedding in Chicago, so we'll be there for about a week or so, and we're also just doing some things around the Great Lakes, so going kind of up the coast along the edge of Lake Michigan to Door County, which Chuck was impressed that I knew existed, and then on to the sort of the south shore of Lake Superior for a couple of days as well, just have a look around the area and check out a couple of states. So we'll be seeing a few baseball games, going to the Red Line doubleheader on September the 8th, and we're going to see the Cubs play the Braves next Thursday as well. So should be getting plenty of baseball action in too.
Very nice. Well, I got to meet Darius a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was April last year, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, about a year and a half ago, I got to meet Darius. Now Darius gets to meet Chuck. We're actually getting to know each other a little bit better than just on this kind of weekly podcast, so that's always nice. Let's go ahead and jump in and talk about some fantasy baseball stuff. We had a guest who was scheduled today. Unfortunately, due to technical issues, he wasn't able to connect via Skype, so we will try to get him on a future podcast. So it's just rolling with us today, and let's start with kind of some interesting news. I do a daily article, it's called the Roto Write-Up, over on Fangraphs. I write it about 4 or 5 times a week, and all of a sudden I kept getting these comments about, what about Josh Donaldson at shortstop? And I didn't quite understand what was going on because I hadn't seen the fact that Josh Donaldson has been playing shortstop. And there were rumors yesterday that Josh Donaldson will play shortstop for the majority of the time rest of the season, which gives him a real chance to potentially get enough games to be eligible heading into next year. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on Josh Donaldson's season so far, and then moving into next year, if he can gain shortstop eligibility, what are your thoughts? Darius, why don't you kick it off?
Well, assuming that they are being serious about this, he should definitely get eligibility, and I think that makes him even more valuable than he already is, because shortstop has not really panned out. A lot of the guys we kind of thought were going to be extremely high end haven't been quite as good. And then as you sort of get to the bottom end of the top 12, top 15, it starts to tail off a lot more quickly than third base does. So I think this makes an already first rounder even more of a first rounder. He looks just like same old great Josh Donaldson. I know the injury was annoying, but other than that, his line looks the same. The power is great. He's going to hit in the heart of the lineup. I think this just makes him even more valuable, and you have to start considering maybe vaulting him above those other third base options just because of that added eligibility, which, as we've just been discussing, is a bonus, especially in those deeper leagues where teams with all these DL players are really killing you.
Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think he lands in the only spot in the draft where it doesn't affect him for me, just meaning that I already had him above, you know, the only debate was him and Miguel Sano, with Sano going, you know, slowing down and going batting average wise and going on the DL. Maybe it nudges him past him, but I literally had him one spot behind Sano. So he's moved up one spot with his outbreak, and I really think he would have done that anyway. So to me, and the reason that I say this is that I already had him as sort of a top 20-ish player, and the people that are above him are all people that I liked more for a reason, and most of them are significantly younger. And the fact that Donaldson was injured for a good chunk of this season means to me that I can't move a, you know, a 32-year-old player, I believe that's the correct age, 32-year-old player up past those guys. I can't do that. I couldn't do it if he was catcher eligible. That's what I'm saying. It wouldn't matter what, if he was eligible at every position on the diamond, I couldn't move him up past anyone but Miguel Sano in my mind, because the injury concern is too great for me, and he plays in sort of an all-out fashion. If you remember correctly, I was pretty down on Donaldson going into last year. Mm-hmm, and as I frequently am, I'm usually 1 year short of predicting a breakout and 1 year short of predicting a downfall. And this is the downfall one. I mean, I really like him as a player. I don't mind taking him around, you know, number 20, but it sounds like I'm not going to get him there if people, if people are going to overlook the injury potential and the age more than I am.
Yeah, I prior to this kind of thought, news that he's gonna be playing one of shortstop where he could potentially get eligibility, I kind of had him pegged as a third round pick coming into next year. That's where I had when I did my ranks for our three sport draft. That's kind of where I had him. So I was thinking even outside of the top 40. And it's hard because, you know, as much as Donaldson's really struggled with injury this year, only getting so far 353 plate appearances in 82 games, he's been very, very reliable and durable the last 4 years previous to this, getting to at least 668 plate appearances, but hitting 700 plate appearances in the last two seasons before this one. So it's kind of hard. I mean, how much credence do we just say this is a lost year? We kind of wash our hands of it and say that this guy's going to go back to being an everyday powerhouse next season? Or do we say maybe this is kind of the beginning of the end? With a depth of third base, I made the determination that I was willing to wait on him quite a bit. The addition of shortstop for me bumps him back up into the second round. So I believe he's a top 30 pick. I still won't take him in the first round, but I can understand why people would. I mean, this is one of the reasons why Machado got such a huge bump, because people really love the fact that he had third and shortstop eligibility coming in the year. Machado obviously going to be losing the shortstop eligibility heading in next year. So let's do some would you rathers. I'm going to throw some third baseman and some shortstops at you guys, and tell me who you would rather have. Would you rather have? Let's see. I'm going to start. I'll start with some shortstops. Would you rather have next year Trey Turner or Josh Donaldson?
Trey Turner for me.
I think you have to take Turner because of the speed. I mean, even with the injury, he still ranks so highly everywhere that regardless of what else he does, he's probably going to return your value. So I would still probably take Turner, but it's close.
Okay. Would you? I'm going to guess that both of you would take Seager or Corey Seager and Carlos Correa over Donaldson. So I'm just going to skip right to, would you rather have Francisco Lindor next year or Josh Donaldson?
I'll take Donaldson there.
I'll take Donaldson there too. And by the way, I would take Donaldson over Seager in the NFBC format.
Okay. You want to elaborate on why?
Well, I think positional eligibility is so important there, and Seager, you know, I have some concerns going forward that, you know, there might be young teams have a hard time handling the kind of success that the Dodgers have had. I mean, look at the first half of the year for the Cubs. So, you know, that's part of it too.
All right. I'm going to throw two more shortstops, then I'll throw a couple third basemen at you. Would you rather have, I'm guessing you're both going to go Donaldson here, but Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah, definitely Donaldson.
Donaldson, not close.
All right, the number one shortstop on the player radar this year has been Elvis Andrus.
Yeah, still Donaldson.
Donaldson.
Okay.
Not close.
So moving on to third, Chuck, you said you would take Donaldson over Sano, but Darius, would you?
Yeah, I think I would. I think the strikeouts are still a little bit too high for me, and if we're going to ding Donaldson for being injured, then Sano is obviously on the DL right now, so I don't think that there's enough there. He doesn't do anything differently to Donaldson for me, so I would still take Donaldson there.
Donaldson or Chris Bryant?
Yeah, I've got to go with Bryant.
I am not a Cubs fan, but I am stuck being very envious of them having Chris Bryant, who I think is legitimately one of the three or four best players in baseball. So I don't think Bryant's even really touched on his potential yet.
Donaldson or Freddie Freeman?
I love Freddie so much. I'm going to go Freeman.
I think I got to go Freeman too. I mean, the third base and first base eligibility is going to matter too.
But I do think Freeman's going to fall short, I believe, in ESPN or leagues, just standard leagues that take 20 games.
He didn't get to 20, right?
Yeah, I don't believe he did. So, but in some formats, Tout Wars, I know, is 15 games. Yahoo,
he's
10
16.
Games.
He's at 16. So, yeah, anywhere that's 15, he will have get it.
Manny Machado.
I never really believed Machado. I never believed Machado was gone, and he's certainly coming back with a vengeance right now. So I think Machado is a top 12 pick next year.
My gut says Donaldson, but that might be my OBP league thing talking, and Machado's never been much of a walker. So that one's really close for me and probably depends on format. But if it's OBP, I'll take Donaldson. I think probably still Machado in standard.
Travis Shaw.
Donaldson.
I love Shaw, obviously, especially what we got him for, but I don't think that's all that close. Travis Shaw is more of a third round pick next year.
All right, last two. Anthony Rendon and Jose Ramirez.
Ramirez feels like one of those guys that I've still not like quite bought it all the way, even though he's just been really good. So I think I will take him, Donaldson over him. Then I don't know with Rendon. He's like somebody who we can't really give the injury pass to either. I mean, he's had a much worse history than Donaldson has, but his approach is terrific. I'll still take Donaldson there.
Donaldson for both for me. I don't buy either player really.
I'm gonna take Jose Ramirez over Donaldson. The speed component, the multi-positional eligibility, the team. He's gonna go 2015 with a 300 average this year, and that to me is so valuable. One more, because I didn't see it before. Jake Lamb or Josh Donaldson?
Donaldson because Lamb still can't hit left-handed pitches.
But does it matter?
His numbers are right, but he is losing at bats because of it.
Yeah.
I think it's Donaldson. Okay. I like Lamb a lot, especially as I'm curious. Lamb is a guy I'll be really curious to see where he goes next year.
I will as well. Let's move on and talk about a guy who will not go as high next year. But Chuck, you wanted to talk about Andrew Cashner. So tell me, what are your thoughts on Andrew Cashner?
Well, I play in a lot of deep leagues, and unbelievably enough, Andrew Cashner has saved me. And I can't describe how dirty I felt as a human being when I picked him up. I mean, you know, he's got a 3.31 ERA. He's 30 years old. He does have a 50% ground ball rate, but that's where the peripherals stop looking good. I mean, I love this. His 4.59 Ks per nine is only slightly greater than his 4.55 FIP. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that. If he manages to finish with like a 4.6 FIP and has a higher FIP than he has Ks per nine, and, you know, he's still a useful sort of, you know, top 100 pitcher, that just amazes me. Now, part of the reason that I could bring him up now is he's 4-2 with a 2.38 ERA in his last seven starts. I mean, you know, a lot of people have been killed by pitching injuries, and more injuries are happening all the time. And unbelievably enough, Andrew Cashner is the kind of pitcher you look at and start shaking your head. But I'm just wondering if there's any point at which we will ignore the peripherals and say he's usable.
Darius, what are your thoughts?
I can't do it. I can't ignore the peripherals. I've never seen. I mean, this is another one of those players where I look at his page and I feel like I'm looking at somebody from the 1920s. It doesn't make any sense at all. I think I'm going to write about him tomorrow because I kind of want to figure this out. But he's got a low home run rate. I think that's probably mostly luck. I think he's getting some weak contacts. There's something there to make up for the fact that he's not striking anybody out and he is walking a ton of guys. I think he's got a ton of double plays, which helps. And the ground ball rate that Chuck mentioned is probably helping with that. But there's no way that this can continue. His ERA should be much closer to 5 rather than under 4. I can't do it. I just can't bring myself to start a guy like this. And I think 5 is his strikeout high on the year as well. So if you are starting him hoping for any kind of upside, you're not really getting it. You're just hoping that he gets the win, I think. And yeah, somehow continues to not give up runs. But I can't look at his numbers and bring myself to start him in any league, no matter how long this goes on.
I have been starting him constantly in the Dynasty League that we were talking about prior to air, where all I'm looking for is innings so I can make this ridiculous innings threshold that we have. I've been pretty much streaming him nonstop, and nobody else has been picking him up on the waiver wire. And he's somewhat hurting me because it's a league in which I want, which I'm rebuilding. I'm trying to get a worse draft pick, and he keeps putting up these, you know, 1- and 2-run outings. So he's actually probably hurting me more than he's helping. But, you know, Chuck mentioned that his K9s is right there with his FIP. It's 4.59 and his FIP is 4.55. My favorite is his walks per nine is actually higher than his ERA.
That is a really good point too.
Yeah, and it should work.
I just want to mention this irony too, is that when I really got into baseball in the early 90s, there was this the exact same thing that we have at Coors Field now is what people thought about pitching in Arlington. They thought there is no way that people can go and pitch in Arlington. They literally had no good pitchers, and then Kenny Rogers came along, and he was kind of halfway decent. And you guys have had to listen to me say this when I argue that someday pitchers in Colorado will be useful. But the point being is that if you were going to write a stat line that you thought could be remotely successful in Texas, right? This stat line is the opposite of it. You would think this could not possibly work.
I honestly couldn't tell you how he's doing it. He has got a 5.7 swinging strike rate this year. and his velocity is the lowest of his career. It has just dropped little by little virtually for the last, 5 years, 5, 6 years. In 2012, he was throwing 97.7. This year he is throwing 93 flat. So, I mean, yeah, this can't work forever, but, I mean, I guess, you know, I can't remember who I was talking to on the podcast recently. It was a guest, and he said, you know, at some point, though, you look at stat line, you go, you know, he may not be able to do it forever, but there's only 6 weeks left in the season. So, I mean, I would use him in decent spots. Like, you know, if you've been using him, you probably used him against the White Sox, and, you know, it did okay there, and he's been able to put it. But, I mean, if you're looking for strikeouts, he doesn't help you. I mean, you're pretty much using him if you're chasing wins or quality starts. And even quality starts are hard to come by because he's not going six a lot of the time. So I would largely ignore Andrew Cashner. Darius, you wanted to talk about Nick Delmonico. Why did you want to talk about him?
Mainly because he's crushing it and he seems to be playing every day. And this was a guy I didn't really know anything about. And that's because he doesn't really ever appear on any prospect lists. Like everything I could find about him seemed to be from a few years ago, not long after he was drafted. I think he came up a couple of times on the Fangraphs Cato lists because he's kind of got decent minor league stats, especially plate discipline. And I think that helps. And so now he's come up and he's homered six times in 20 games and he's batting fourth for the White Sox and sharing the first base and DH duties with Jose Abreu. And he actually kind of had a decent walk rate and strikeout rate at AAA this year. And yeah, I just wonder if this is one of these guys that nobody ever really talks about and just comes up and hits. You don't normally see a rookie with this kind of walk rate. He's walking almost as much as he strikes out. I know the sample size is incredibly small, but it's still kind of impressive. And I just think if you're looking for somebody who nobody's heard of, who's playing every day and actually seems to have a decent amount of power, then this is actually a pretty decent option. He's going to be available in a ton of leagues.
Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, he has six home runs in 20 games, and he has a 30% home run to fly ball rate, which is obviously unsustainable, but I don't think anyone really is pretending like it's sustainable. He's 25 years old. He never batted over 262 in any minor league baseball stop of more than 38 games. So, you know, other than really small sample sizes, he's a guy who's had severe struggles with batting average until this year. You know, now he's only got a 333 BABIP, which doesn't seem preposterous by any means, but at the same time, it's going to be an interesting case study because it's hard to imagine how much we study metrics and everything else, looking at anything in his profile telling us that he could be anywhere as close to this good. I mean, I think the reason that no one's heard of him is that everyone assumed he was at most a bench player, at most, best case scenario. And right now he's playing like he's a building block for that organization. So he's available in five of the six leagues that I'm in this year. I saw that today as well.
Yeah, I definitely think he's closer to bench player than building block, but he's playing right now and he seems to have power, so why not?
Only 6 weeks left, like he says. I mean, yeah. He plays good for two of them. That's a third of your season.
I believe in Nicky Delmonico more than I believe in Andrew Cashner, put it that way.
I'm actually checking to see if he's available in any of my AL only, and it does not appear so. He's available in one of my AL onlys. I literally had no idea who this guy was until Darius sent me the name the other night when I asked you guys who you guys wanted to talk about this week. And for good reason. I mean, you know, he's never had more than 17 home runs in a season through the minor leagues. He has never really hit for a strong average. I mean, to me, this is a guy who is just getting hot, and pitchers don't know how to attack him yet. They'll figure it out. It's interesting because he's already chipped in two stolen bases, and he's a pretty large dude for the most part, so I don't think that's really that sustainable either. He's played multiple different positions in the minor leagues, telling me he's probably not very good defensively in any of them. So, I think this is a guy that in an AL only, if he's still available, you go out and get him. But I can't even really push him for like a 15-team league right now because there's no way that the power streak we've seen so far is sustainable. The nice thing is he does walk, and he's walked virtually throughout the minor leagues, except for two small samples between high A and A ball in 2014-2015. So, you know, he's putting up a 14% walk rate. It's somewhat supported by the fact that he walked over 10% of the time in AAA this year, and just under 10% in AAA last year. So, I just can't. I can't buy it. He's going in the Andrew Cashner group for me of guys, things I'm not going to buy or pay for.
I need to thank Darius, because I kept thinking in the back of my skull this whole time, I go, that cannot be the same Delmonico that was in the Brewers system. It just cannot be. And so since he made me look him up, I realized that he is the Delmonico that was in the Brewers system.
Well, he only hit 4 home runs for you guys in 58
games. I think the Orioles drafted him, right?
Yeah, he was in the Orioles 2012-2013. I'm not super interested. I mean, the only thing that's nice is he's playing for the White Sox, who really don't have a ton of major league talent on the roster anyways. So there's a good chance he's actually getting playing time. So, I mean, in AL-only leagues, especially leagues that deep enough where at-bats are really currency, then, I mean, he's going to have some value, because there is a really good chance he could play a fair amount of the time moving forward. Let's move on. Let's talk about Patrick Corbin, who's been very hot as of late. Chuck, you wanted to talk about him, I believe, so why don't you go ahead and lead it off on Patrick Corbin?
Well, on a whim, I checked in our three-sport draft, and I got him in round 51 of a 55-round draft total. 7 starting pitchers were taken after him. He was taken after the likes of Tyler Glasnow and Tanner Roark. So he's 28 years old. He's significantly better in every category but ground ball percentage than last year. 8.66 Ks per 9 certainly plays. The first thought is, boy, you know, he's a National League pitcher, but that park's not very friendly. How about a 2.87 home ERA? How about a 2.84 post-All-Star break ERA? And in case you were wondering, back in 15, before he got hurt, he had a 3.36 post-All-Star break ERA. So I see a ton that I like, and this is an odd format for me to do this, to bring up something known as, East Coast and Central bias, because, the games start a lot later on the West Coast. But I just wonder, I picked him up in one of my leagues like a couple weeks ago when there's no way he should have been available. I wonder if the fact that these games end late, I wonder if there's a potential buying opportunity here on Patrick Corbin going forward.
Darius, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this version of Corbin looks pretty damn good. My main concern is that he's going to the slider just an incredible amount, 43% usage so far this month, and it's been devastating, over a 30% strikeout rate on the pitch in August. It's been by far his best pitch. I just wonder if this is something that's sustainable over a full season. I know guys like Chris Archer have the incredibly heavy slider usage, but you don't see it very often. And I don't think there's a ton else in the arsenal that makes me encouraged about it. So I think as long as he's getting ahead a decent amount of the time and he can go to that slider that often, then I think he's going to be pretty good, because it looks like a pretty difficult pitch to hit. I just wonder whether this is something that can be sustained over a full year. But the rest of the way, while he's pitching like this, I would definitely grab him and start him wherever you can, because hitters are having a really hard time dealing with that slider. And I think probably with 6 weeks left in the year, they're not going to figure it out before the year's out. So yeah, use him now. I just kind of watch for that long term and see if he can figure out maybe another pitch to complement it a bit, so he doesn't have to rely on it so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think Darius just nailed it on the head. The slider's been great this year, and like you said, he's using it a ton. The rest of the arsenal sucks, including his fastball. And I mean, one of the things I've talked about is, for the most part, there are very few exceptions where I like a bad fastball guy. And this guy is a bad fastball guy. And for the most part, he's always been kind of a bad fastball guy. In his breakout season in 2013, his fastball was decent, wasn't great. But I mean, ever since coming back from the injury, it's just it's straight. It's not a very good pitch. The changeup is absolutely atrocious. So if you've got a guy that predominantly relies on three pitches, one of them's great, two of them are shit, you're going to have problems. And a guy who's got a health track record like Patrick Corbin, I really don't like the idea of him throwing 30% plus sliders. So long term, I hate him because I think they're if he doesn't change what he's doing, he's going to get hurt again. And even if he doesn't get hurt, I don't think the results will be fantastic over the course of a full season next year. But rest of the way this year, sure, ride him while he's hot. You know, I mean, just like I was talking about before, you know, at this point in the season, you might as well ride with the guys who brought you there, and he is pitching fairly well. So not a guy who I've liked in the past and not a guy I like for the future, but for right now, I think you could do much worse. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Byron Buxton, talking about a guy who hasn't been good in the past, and I don't know how good he's going to be in the future, but Byron Buxton is hot as fuck right now, absolutely just smoking it. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Byron Buxton for now and then moving on to the next year?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy I've kept coming back to over and over again. Every time I write something about looking for stolen bases, I seem to end up on Buxton. Mm-hmm. I did it again this week because he's got some terrific matchups over the last 5-6 weeks for stolen bases with some terrible catches behind the plate. And the unfortunate part is he's getting picked up everywhere because he's been so hot anyway. The strikeout rate has come down. It's still about 25%, but it's a lot better than it was in the first half. He's got a super high BABIP, of course, but he is really fast, so I think he can run an above average. And the speed is incredible. He's 22 for 23 stealing this year. And I don't think that's the only way in which he's like Billy Hamilton, because he's so good defensively in center field that the Twins are going to keep playing him no matter how bad he is. And so if you just need steals anyway, even if he slumps over the last few weeks, I think you're going to get the stolen bases out of him. As long as you can get on base even a little bit, it's just a case of whether that approach has really improved so much. And I know he's ditched the leg kick, which seems to be working for him at the moment. So we'll see how that carries going forward. We know what the pedigree is. I think the speed is one of the best tools in baseball. So we'll see if he can kind of translate some of that pedigree into actual performance at the plate, because I think he can be a better hitter than Hamilton is. And I think if he is, then he's probably not going to be too far behind in how many bases he can steal.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Buxton?
Well, I'm not nearly as rosy of an outlook guy on Buxton as that. First of all, I don't really care for speed-only guys. Second of all, you know, there's a pretty large difference between a guy that I think tops out at 40 stolen bases and a guy that I think tops out at 75 stolen bases, which is where I find the difference to be between Hamilton and Buxton. And it's hard for me not to note that, I mean, like a month ago, literally a month ago, I remember listening to other outlets and having them say, is it time to give up on Byron Buxton because he's been so dreadful, horrible? I do agree. I guess I understand, and it does bring to light the fact that the Twins have stayed behind him because of the excellent defense and the incredible, relatively speaking, the incredible base running prowess that he possesses. I've never been prone to guys that are power only guys, and I've never been prone to guys that are speed only guys. And I don't trust, this is his second good month in the bigs, and I don't have any trust level for him whatsoever.
I mean, he has hot 9 home runs. He's not at only speed.
Yeah, I mean, I think like I understand where you're coming from, Chuck. At the same time, I think the one real argument against Buxton coming in, you know, rest of the way, I think you ride him while he's hot, obviously. I mean, he's been a guy who's really struggled versus right-handed pitching. And over the course of the last 2 months, in July, he batted 391 against right-handed pitching. In August, he batted 279. He's been batting 279 against right-handed pitching. I think if he can continue to hit well, And he doesn't have to hit 300, obviously, against right handed pitching. But if he can hit 270 against righties and then crush lefties, I think he's a guy that could really take a step forward because he does have game-changing speed. Like Darius mentioned, a fantastic defensive player. So even when he does struggle, he'll be in there. The problem is there are Buxton truthers out there. Like, there are people who every year have gone to bat for this kid and will not give up. And those are the people that are going to pay a ton for him next year. And what we saw after last year is he had that hot month last year towards the end, and his price went up dramatically. This is going to do that same next year. And so next year, I think his price is going to be too high for me to be willing to get in on him. But you have to remember, he's only 23 years old. He's going to be 24 at the end of the year. He's still very young. Prospects grow at different rates. And it could be this could be him figuring it out. I just don't know if I'm going to be willing to pay the price next year. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Blake Snell, who's been pretty decent as of late since coming back up to the major leagues. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Blake Snell?
For some reason, I'm in the opposite corner on Blake Snell than I've been on Buxton. I sort of always believed that he was going to put it together. And he's showing some signs that he's done that recently. I mean, I need a lot more from him than this, you know, than what we've seen so far. His overall numbers certainly will not sort of jump out at anybody or give anybody any pause to think he's on the brink of greatness. I mean, hasn't even gotten to 8 Ks per 9 on the year, which sort of tells you that he's been fighting to try and find the control that he's hasn't had as a major league pitcher. You know, his FIP is even higher than his ERA. That's obviously not ideal. But then again, you know, he got sent down and he came back. And when he was in the minors, he looked great. And the naysayers said that he's your traditional quad A kind of pitcher. And since he's been back, suddenly he's been pretty good, including an absolute gem in his last start. So I'm having a hard time dismissing it or embracing it. I want to see a little bit more.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Snell?
I think the talent is definitely there. He's got a terrific curveball when it's working. I think the changeup can be really good. Once again, we come back to a guy who's not got the fastball to where it needs to be to be a really useful starter, I don't think. And I don't think the fastball command is suddenly there. I watched a bit of his last few starts, and while the results were good, I think he got away with a lot. And I think he's not going to do that every time. So until that comes around, it's very difficult to trust him. I'm kind of with Chuck. I want to see some more. I want to see some improvements with that fastball command. And maybe he's a guy who can do a Rich Hill and rely more on the curveball so he doesn't have to use the fastball so much. But I think something needs to change. And whether it's improving that command or relying on his secondaries more often, neither of those things have happened so far. So I think I'm going to kind of wait and see. And maybe he'll be super cheap next year anyway with this terrible kind of walk rate under his belt this year. And you'll be able to get him at a bargain anyway. But yeah, I'm certainly kind of on the, unless I can have him as like my last guy on my bench, I'm probably not going to want to trust him any more than that.
I think the beauty of a guy like Blake Snell is that you probably will be able to get him as your last guy on your bench unless he just goes through a torrid hot streak right here at the end and becomes a bunch of people's sleeper picks. But like you mentioned, and I mentioned before, I don't really like a bad fastball guy. I don't think his fastball is particularly good, and he kind of doubles down on that with really bad command. Not to mention, I mean, you know, usually a guy like this, maybe I'll say, like, oh, ride him while he's hot. I wouldn't even do that. I mean, he's only been able to get, you know, past 6 1/3 innings twice this season at the major league level. And even in the majority of his starts, he's not racking up strikeouts. So it's like, you know, I mean, it's a guy who doesn't give you a great ERA, walks way too many guys, and doesn't even get the strikeouts that you're looking for from a guy like Snell. I think he has the talent to put it all together and pitch in. I think he sits about 94 with the fastball from the left-hand side. That's really nice, but at the end of the day, I think he still has a lot to work on, and until I see improvement, I don't think he's going to be on many of my fantasy teams. Let's talk a little bit about his teammate, Evan Longoria, who, you know, a lot of times what I do for this podcast is I go to the player rater and I sort by the last 15 days, the last 7 days, and kind of try to look at guys who are hot at the moment, because I think, you know, that's, you know, there's a little bit of recency bias and you want to talk about guys who are doing well, and the, you know, names pop up that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be kind of in, you know, near the top of the player rater over the course of the last week or 2 weeks. And sometimes when I'm running out of options, you know, there's a bunch of guys up there that we've already talked about recently, there's not really a ton of interesting names. What I'll do is I'll reverse it. So I'll sort it by the worst guys over the course of the last 2 weeks. And Evan Longoria's name popped up right there. So that's why we're talking about Evan Longoria, mired in a really, really bad slump right now over the course of the last 2 weeks. One of the worst hitters in baseball over that time period. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Evan Longoria rest of the way? And then looking into next year, is this guy kind of done?
I think there are some concerning signs here. He kind of underwent a change a few years back where the plate discipline that characterizes earlier years went away a bit. He became more aggressive, and so the walk rate went down, but actually you got some decent power numbers out of him in the last few years. That kind of seems to have gone away as well now. He's hitting a lot more ground balls. He's at a career high 44.7% at the moment. He's making a lot more soft contact, and I think the aggressive approach possibly indicates his bat maybe is slowing down. I'm seeing a lot of foul strikes this year as well, that he's just getting there a bit too late on the ball. And so I think it does kind of look like this is the start of a slippery slope. And we've seen guys like this kind of be able to make changes and start doing something else at the plate and hang on for a few more years. But already the new aggressive approach was less attractive to me as somebody who plays in a ton of OBP leagues. Now, if you're not getting the power either, if he can't find a way to get the ball in the air as often as he did last year, he's starting to look fairly unusable in a lot of leagues. His home run total is not exciting. Third base is stacked. I think there's a risk that he's kind of an afterthought in fantasy next year, because where is the upside coming from? It's not in the average. It doesn't look like it's the power. And if the bat is slowing down a bit, then it's only going to get worse as he gets older. So, yeah, I'm kind of feeling pretty down about Longoria right now.
Chuck, what are your thoughts about Longoria?
Well, my thoughts are that I don't share the same pessimism that Darius does. I think some things are at play here, though. You know, I think the fact that third base has gotten so deep that, you know, he's sort of turned into an afterthought, where he used to be a guy that was drafted quite early in drafts, means that what I need to get out of him is a lot less. Per se, because of, you know, you just need to get a lot less out of a, you know, a 15th or 16th round pick than you needed to get out of a guy who was going in the first three or four rounds earlier in his career. I also, I'm going to sound like a sort of a mirror, sort of a complete opposite of Darius here. I love the fact that his K rate is the lowest that he's had since 2010. Okay. His walk rate is up from last year, almost 1.5%. His BABIP is low for him, which, you know, it's 286 this year. So that means that I think there's a little upward mobility. I don't think we're in as much disagreement as it might appear. I'm saying that I think in some drafts you're going to see him slip because third base is so deep and people are covering that position so much earlier than they used to. And so I think he slips to a point where if he can get healthy, like this last couple of weeks, you know, he's been battling a thumb injury. You know, he just recently got back in the lineup from that thumb injury. So my point is that if you could catch a break on him being healthy, and he's a guy that you can have like on your bench and as your corner, sort of in and out. And he's a guy who is in an offense, an American League East offense, where he's certainly always going to be positioned in the middle of it, that I see some sort of sneaky late value if you get him late. If someone wants to draft him like he's Evan Longoria from 5 years ago, then I'm in complete agreement with Darius. So I guess I couldn't be approaching this any more differently than Darius is, because I don't think he's on the brink of returning to greatness by any means, but I think you could get some surprising usability out of him if he falls too far.
It's interesting because his contact rate is the best of his career as well. And you have to wonder how much injuries have played a role kind of in the lack of power this year, because there's definitely something wrong. I mean, he's getting good contact, or he's getting a lot of contact, but it's a lot of it's going on the ground. You got to wonder if maybe thumb injuries, other injuries are kind of sapping his power, maybe changing his swing a little bit, and maybe that's the reason he's not lifting the ball as much. I'm concerned because this was a guy that we thought would struggle with injuries, and then the last 4 years previous to this, he was very, very healthy. But the years prior to that, he was he definitely had some injury issues. So it's you wonder if maybe as he gets a little bit older, if this is a guy that's going to struggle with injuries moving forward. He doesn't play in a fantastic hitter's park, and he's never going to really have a fantastic hitter's lineup around him. And he signed with the Rays through 2022, plus an option year for 2023. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. I think his name value alone will always keep him a little bit overinflated for where he should be going. But I do agree with Chuck that maybe next year will be the year you get some sort of discount. And he's only a season removed away from hitting 36 home runs with a .273 average. So I'm not necessarily ready to give up on him, and if I can get him at a decent price, considering the depth at third base next year, I may take a shot on him in a couple different spots, but you know, there's an argument to be made that maybe the 36 home runs was just an outlier, because in 2014, 2015, he obviously only got to 22 home runs and 21 home runs, respectively. So I'm a little kind of in between you guys. I'm a little torn. I would like to see maybe, you know, maybe some interviews with him and see, you know, maybe at the end of the season and see what he says about how much injuries played a role in kind of his down season this year, because I've got a feeling that, that's part of it.
Well, in his down season of 2012, he fought forms of what I'm fighting right now and have been fighting all summer, which is plantar fasciitis and foot problems. And earlier in the year, I heard a report that he had those foot problems again, and that he announced that he was going to play through them. And the second that I heard that, I knew that he was going to really struggle this year. You know, he is 31 now. Maybe he won't recover like he did. But if you remember correctly, Corey Dickerson's a guy who has been pretty productive this year and been a pretty good late game value, who struggled with plantar fasciitis at one point too.
On the counter effect or counter side of that, so did Albert Pujols, and he struggled with them off and on for the last couple of years because of it. So I mean, it's you know, I think there's reason to be hopeful that he can maybe kind of recover some things, and then there's reasons to really doubt that he can. I think for me, he's a guy that's all about value. If he's going outside like the top 150, 175 next year, I think he's a bargain. But I mean, inside the top 150, I'm probably staying away.
Yeah, I don't think Chuck and I are actually very different at all in where we would happily take him next year. It's just I was approaching it from the perspective as a guy who is drafted around, I think he was back end of the top 100 maybe in a lot of leagues. And from that perspective, he's been a big disappointment. And if he's anywhere near that next year, I think we all agree that we're not taking him. So yeah, if he's free, then he's been a great MLB hitter for a very long time, and he certainly has the talent to make adjustments. And if he's healthy, then he can be good again. But I'm not going to pay for remotely close to what you had to pay from this year.
Yeah, for reference, he was the 94th pick overall on ESPN.com. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about Parker Bridwell. I did not do this on purpose, but looking at his numbers now, these are eerily reminds me of Andrew Kastner quite a bit, though walks a lot less guys. But Terry, what are your thoughts on Bridwell, who's been hot as of late?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's that bad. I think the control is a lot better than Cashner's is. You're not getting strikeouts from him. I do buy there's more contact management skill here than with Cashner, but I'm not sure how much of that is just unfamiliarity. He's obviously brand new to the league. His expected WOBA is only 40 points higher than his actual, which would turn him from a kind of useful pitcher in deeper leagues into completely unusable in pretty much every league. And the slider has been kind of one nice aspect of his arsenal, but overall, I don't think there's a ton there. Watching his other pitches, there's not a massive amount of movement on them. I think major league hitters are going to catch up to him. And I know I said this probably a couple of months ago now, but I think he's just had a bit of a lucky run. And you know, he's got some decent command. I think he does know how to pitch and he's not wild or anything like that. You don't have a walk rate that low by not being able to get it near the zone. But I think major league hitters will catch up to him. And maybe it won't happen over the last 6 weeks and you'll get away with it. But I think long term, this is going to be a back end of a major league rotation guy at best. And I think you'll be lucky to be back end of a fantasy rotation.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Birdwell?
Well, I think it's ironic that we're talking about him again, because I remember I mentioned him when he first popped up on the scene. And I got reactions like from my cousin Dave, who couldn't stop laughing from the fact that he was listening to the podcast and he heard the name and said, "Who the hell is Parker Bridwell?" And then later on, I said, "I bet there's people out there who said, 'Who the hell is Parker Bridwell?'" So there is that. And he has proven to be sort of useful in a very fringy kind of way. I don't know if you guys have had this experience this year, but I play in enough deep leagues that all of a sudden I'm in trouble and some guys go on the DL that I wasn't expecting. And I look at the waiver wire and I feel like I should have an airbag next to me. I mean, they're just guys that I just can't fathom possibly trusting. Mm-hmm. So I get to the point where I say, well, you know, I mean, regardless of how bad, you know, I used Ty Block for a long stretch this year too, who had these really ugly peripherals. But the point being is, like, I mean, if you're having some success on the mound, it's hard in some of these leagues nowadays not to try and catch a little lightning in a bottle and get through a couple of your guys that should be back off the DL in a few weeks. And I certainly don't think Bridwell is anything more than that. I mean, he doesn't have dominating. He's got one outing all year where he's got more than four strikeouts, you know, and he doesn't have any clean outings since way back in, you know, way back in early June. So early August. So I'm struggling to see that he's a guy that you can put any stock in going forward. I mean, it really is a statement on the American League wildcard itself, that the quality of the teams that are in contention, I think, is pretty shaky. I mean, I know the Brewers are pretty shaky in the National League, but the rest of the teams, I think, have quite a bit more upside than I'm seeing in this sort of compost heap that's competing for this last AL wildcard spot.
Yeah, I mean, Bridwell's an interesting guy, but he doesn't strike out enough batters to really be usable in a large amount of formats. I think he's getting lucky in a number of different areas. Now, again, keep repeating this, you know, things like this can continue to go on in short samples, and what we have left in a season is a short sample. But he's got a 267 BABIP. His strand rate is almost 84%. I think both those numbers come back to haunt him a little bit, and will blow up that ERA, which has been fantastic. Sub-3 ERA so far this year. I think the other thing he has to worry about is the Angels are starting to get rotation pieces back. I know they just lost JC Ramirez, but you've got Matt Shoemaker and Garrett Richards both on rehab assignments, and you know they'll take roles once they're ready to go. Who knows what their health situation's like, and what the rotation looks like here in the next few weeks? But there's a real chance that Birdwell could get bumped out of the rotation and back into a bullpen role where he probably belongs. So I think that the potential downside, moving forward, it just isn't. It just makes it not worth it to take a shot on a guy like Parker Birdwell. Let's talk about AJ Pollock. Pollock is, he's played 80 games so far this year, 335 plate appearances, so he's been injured for a little while, but he's put together a decent line: 266, 316, 439, 6 home runs, 17 stolen bases. Is this a guy that we can start to trust a little bit more in fantasy, Chuck?
Well, I think we need the outfield depth for sure, and I think we would love for him to be, completely healthy for a season. I think this is the poster boy for trying to gauge value going forward in fantasy categories. I mean, he's a guy who obviously, he's missed a pretty good chunk of time. So he's a guy who could steal 30 plus bases, and he's a guy who has chipped in the past with, double digit home runs. And his batting average usually doesn't kill you. So the question is, when does he move into the outfield rankings? I got a question the other day about a keeper question about him or his present teammate, who's I believe is going to be a free agent at the end of the year, JD Martinez. And I thought that was a very fascinating question because JD Martinez has struggled with injuries. He gives you zero speed. He's a plus power guy. And it's almost like AJ Pollock is the opposite player, pretty safe in most of the categories and a good speed guy. So I don't know. This is one of those guys that's going to be a roster construction guy for me. I don't hate him at all where he's likely to go next year. It's just a matter of if I've taken a Trey Turner or someone like that ahead of him, then I won't be, to me, I'll be fighting against or trying to catch up on power the whole rest of the draft if I take somebody who has this potential downside in power. But he doesn't come with zero upside. So it's not, to me, it's quite a bit different than, a Billy Hamilton type, obviously. So I like him, and I'm elated that we have him back, because the outfield is frequently an area I play in almost exclusively five outfielder leagues and deeper leagues where there's just not enough good outfielders. And I hate that feeling of, praying for a Carlos Gomez revitalization already at your number three or number four outfielder. So I'm happy to have him back. I think I'm leaning towards optimism on AJ Pollock for next year.
Darius, what are your thoughts? Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
I think I'm a little more pessimistic just because I'm kind of disappointed with how he's hit this year. And I'm being an OBP bias again here, but that walk rate is just not very good. And without the batting average being up there, that's not been that helpful. I play in the 6x6 league with OBP and slugging. He's doing nothing in that league. He's basically been useful in one category. His RBI have also been terrible, which is kind of fluky, but it really does mean that there's been almost nothing out of him this year. Having said that, we've talked about a few guys already today who you need to use for the speed. He does have that. I think he's better than a lot of those guys who are speed only. And I think he can be better than he is this year. It's just a case of where are you going to get with that power? And in the terms of Pollock versus Martinez, there's no question in my mind that I would take Martinez by a long way, because I just think he's a much better actual hitter. And I'd rather put my stock in that, even though he has had his injury concerns, so has Pollock. And I think I would much rather just take the power, and Martinez could easily hit 30 home runs in 2/3 of a season of playing time anyway. So I think there's just more upside there, even with the risk. So yeah, I'm kind of waiting to see where he goes. I was disappointed with his draft slot this year because I didn't think we were getting the discount that we should have done based on his kind of injury hit 2016. And I think people were looking at that big year he had a couple of years ago and kind of projecting that again. And I don't think we're going to see that again. So if he's kind of sliding back outside the top 100, 150 or something like that, I could see taking him as a speed guy with upside. But I think there's a risk that people will do that again, especially now that he's back and stealing bases, and the Diamondbacks actually look like they're kind of good.
Yeah, I mean, the fantasy industry is a weird, funny industry at times, because sometimes, just on this podcast, so you know, this episode we've been talking on, we've talked about guys that we downgrade because of injuries, and now we're talking about a guy maybe that we give a little bit more credit than he deserves because he's been injured. Because there's no reason that Pollock, to me, should be a top 150 pick coming in next year. But God knows there will be people going, well, if he can just stay healthy, like, this is a guy that could go 20-30, 20-40 again. And I don't know why we're not talking about the 20 home runs as just an outlier. Like, it was a season in which he put everything together. Everything went right for him. I don't think he is ever going to hit 20 home runs at the major league level again. Now, because of his speed, he doesn't need to. But I think for some reason we overdraft him, and people definitely did this year. I wasn't one of them. But a lot of people overdrafted Pollock with the idea that, oh, man, this could be a real difference maker. He's been truly atrocious in the second half, and even worse just if you boil it down to this sample of so far what he's done this month. He's batting under 150. You know, he's walking less than he ever has, and only last year in a really, really short sample has he ever been like a good walk rate guy. Anyways, he's got speed, but to me, he doesn't necessarily have the elite speed of a D. Gordon or a Billy Hamilton necessarily, in terms of what kind of stolen bases he picks up. So I would rather have one of, honestly, I'd rather have Byron Buxton.
Oh,
you just
about floored me. You just about knocked me right off my chair when you said that. I guess the other, I want to mention this.
Before you give me a counter, on what I just said right there, look at the numbers. I mean, the difference in plate appearances, the difference, I mean, Buxton has more stolen bases. Buxton has more home runs. The only difference is 20 points of average. But Buxton pretty much beats him up and down the board. And I know Buxton will play every day. I don't know that from AJ Pollock because of the injury issues.
Well, I just want to mention that sort of one clarifier in what's going into my theory. And you guys are more than welcome to shoot this down after I say it. But I give extra credence. I think it takes people a lot longer to recover from the kind of injury that AJ Pollock had. When he has to take virtually like a full year plus off, I expect there to be sort of some issues. And then he got back and, then he had a different form of a leg injury right away. So I am not fully buying into the fact that he'll ever be the player that he was again, but I am adding into the value the fact that he was that player at one time. And the old dictum says that when a player shows off an ability like that for a full season, he owns it. I don't expect it to ever come again. But if he gets to 2/3 of that and you're getting him at any form of a discount, I sort of like it. And I can't consider it out of the realm of possibility that I would never, I would never go in hoping for 20 home runs and 40 steals. But the value of the steal has gotten so much. And a guy like Buxton has just never come remotely close to what Pollock did for a year. So there's a lot of things that play in my head right here. And I'm not blaming you guys for saying, nope, I'm not buying in. I couldn't agree more with Darius. The places that people were drafting him last year was absolutely absurd. I mean, he was going before, completely trustworthy, reliable MLB outfielders last year. I saw him taken in like the fourth and the fifth round last year, which is just absolutely bonkers. But I have a feeling that this year you're going to see sort of an opposite effect. And if he gets, well outside you can get him outside the top 100. To me, he's a guy that's shown something in the past and has had to recover from a really long, lengthy injury. So I'm putting maybe like a 65% chance that he gets back to 2/3 of where he was. And if he does, I think there's a little more value here than you guys are giving him credit for.
Pollock was taken as a top 40 player in NFBC.
It's just bananas. It's just all out ludicrous. I mean, it made no sense to me at the time. I mean, so I understand where, you know, some of the disappointment comes from, because if you took him there, I mean, he's been a wild disappointment, but I don't know why you thought he was going to be a top 40 guy to begin with.
Yeah, those were people shooting for the overall, thinking they were going to hopefully get a 2040 guy. But I want to see what his max pick actually was. Someone took him 18th overall. You are not winning the overall, dude, whoever you are. You are definitely not listening to this podcast either, so I can make fun of you in hopes that you haven't started listening mid-season.
I really hope they are, and they email in and tell you that they're winning the overall. That'd be great.
If you are listening, contact me. Just contact me. I will give you something as a consolation prize. We're gonna finish on this one, but the last note I wanna just make a difference between Byron Buxton and AJ Pollock. AJ Pollock is gonna be 30 years old next season, coming into next season. At the end of the year, he turns 30. Byron Buxton is going to be 24. I'm gonna take Buxton over Pollock every day in every day of the week next year. There's no way that I can legitimately rank Pollock above Byron Buxton. And I'm not necessarily a Byron Buxton guy, but I'm that low on AJ Pollock. All right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Darius, what are you working on? Where can people reach you at?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. Got a piece up on FWFB where I just sort of sat down and looked at things about the schedule that might be worth taking action on. One of them was start everybody you can against the Reds pitchers, who are just awful and seem to be intent on setting a new terrible pitching record every year. So especially the Pirates, they've got 9 games left. There's about a quarter of their remaining games against the Reds. So pick up any Pirates who are available. You're probably going to get some nice matchups. Also got something on Alex Avila coming over at BP Wrigleyville tomorrow, with him kind of replacing Wilson Contreras for the next few weeks. Kind of looked at his surprising offensive season, and there's some interesting stats about how he ranks up with guys like Bryce Harper and Mike Trout and Joey Votto in a few categories. So check that out if you want to know why Alex Avila is so good. And then I'm also going to write something about Andrew Cashner. I'll probably stake that over on Banish to the Pen, because I'm going to try and figure out if I should be giving him more credit than I am. So watch out for that too.
Chuck, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It. My Of Note column this week is probably one of the few times that it will be very obvious that I was an English major in school, because I talk about the tragedy and the irony surrounding Sam Dyson and Mark Melanson, two of the most disappointing closers in fantasy baseball, and how somehow they ended up in the same bullpen this year, sort of sniping each other for any sort of grains of remaining value that you have from their overblown draft values of last year. And other than that, I'm doing a couple podcasts a week and sort of joining the football fun and throwing myself out there as a potential sub for any football podcasts that need a guest, since I follow it closely enough for that. So that's what I'm up to.
All right. You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review. It really helps us out. And if it's of the 5-star variety, that'll get you entered in to win some free stuff, along with a guy who took AJ Pollock 18th overall and is still listening to this podcast. You can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, which you can get also on the TuneIn app and the iHeartRadio app, as well as on the on their own app or online. That's on Thursdays, 6 to 8 Pacific, 9 to 11 Eastern, with Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. So definitely check that out. And then I write over at Fangraphs 4 to 5 times a week. I write on Friends of Fantasy Benefits whenever I feel like it. And then I'm picking up a new job here very shortly that I will probably announce sometime next week. So definitely look forward to hearing that, especially if you are a fantasy football fan. So that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Chuck, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone, we sleep a
Justin, I offer one more bit of irony. Should the two Giants fans that are listening to the podcast be further morose because they're not beating up on Matt Garza, or should I, as a Brewer fan, be depressed that we're not beating up on the Giants?
I'm glad I didn't hit stop the record.